This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The people that are in the vet school, because we have similarities. We understand. We grew
but
up.
But those are the students that are going to be out of practice in 5 years.
What, the ones that, the Gen Zers? Yeah, 100%. Or they're going to go into something that's like super low stress.
What, like vaccine clinics?
Yeah, or youth at-home euthanasia programs.
But that's, dude, that emotional labor that's involved with that, that's going to fucking kill them. Get started. This is all good shit.
Let's do it.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Dr. G. This is Irreplaceable Truths. And I got my compadre in crime over here. Garth, this is our second time sitting together.
I know.
And I'm opening the mic for you just to nail me away. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody, and we'll get started.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be back here. It feels like I'm already at my little home away from home. But yeah, my name is Garth Robillard. I am a current third year veterinary student, and I have a podcast called Veterinary Vibes, and it's a podcast where we talk about all things veterinary medicine, and this is a big component of it. And I'm just excited to be real about vet med and how we can change it. So,
well, you got to remember, I come from the time when vet med was awesome. Early 2000s, it was like the roaring 20s. That would be the equivalent, I would say. And, It was absolutely amazing. We didn't really hear, you would read an article here and there about burnout. And actually the big words that came out probably around right after the Great Recession was compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. That's the one they started pushing.
Yeah.
But no one really pushed it. And then obviously as we were getting closer to COVID and then COVID hit, then burnout and attrition is now a real topic. So I hope by having these conversations, you and I together, we can avoid having people leave the profession because of problems with the profession itself. Now, if they come into the profession with problems, I don't know if you and I can really help them.
Sure.
But for those who have issues with the profession, that's why you and I are doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, those are like key words for people, you know, burnout, fatigue, overwork, underpaid, all these things kind of go together to just be the biggest recipe for disaster. And like, I kind of like that you already started talking about coming in with previous issues. I mean, if you look at, you know, the mental health as a whole within the profession, even before they're starting the career, it's pretty tough right now, especially in the current climate with everything going on, with the way the generational mindsets are shifting. You know, luckily, I think they're getting a better hold on certain realms of finding help for mental health, but it's really easy to just suppress that down. And then when you get into these super stressful scenarios for the first time, so a lot of these vet students going into school, they don't have quote unquote real life experience, or they haven't really been as tested as some other people, like later non-traditional students. Then the first time that they get hit with something extremely emotionally taxing, it cripples them. And I think that's why you see a large portion of the profession wanting to go away from it or wanting to do easier, quote unquote, easier tasks or things like that. So my question to you about this whole fatigue, burnout, attrition issues, like why is it really vamping up, or has it always been around? Like, what have you noticed in your career and what are you seeing now?
Well, you know, it depends who you talk to. There are people that say it's a generational problem. There are people that saying it's a gender problem because veterinary medicine has feminized. And I've said many times, I am a girl dad. Mm-hmm. I have three daughters. I have a wife who's a full-time veterinarian. She's a rock star of a veterinarian. When I say feminization of the profession, I'm not saying in a negative way. I'm saying we haven't changed the way we've done things. And this whole veterinary medicine profession started in 1873 in a barn mm-hmm. by a bunch of dudes. And it's basically feminized, I would say, since the early 90s. It started really, the ratios started mm-hmm. changing. So these women are living, that are veterinarians are living a dual identity. So they're a female that has to have almost male qualities because it's a male-gendered profession. We haven't really changed the way we do things as far as helping with emotional issues.
Right.
Why is the gender thing a problem? Well, if you look at it, there's two types of family lifestyle, right? There is the progressive, where the husbands and the wives share everything 50-50. The husbands set up carpool. The wives set up doctor's appointments. They both go to after school stuff. They both are working. It's kind of where society is shifting, at least in the United States. Every country is different as far as cultural background when it comes to that. But also there's the traditional family. And the traditional family is, and my wife is guilty of this, is that even though I said, hey, I can do something, she still needs to make the lunch. Mm-hmm. She still needs to make the doctor's appointments. She still needs to organize the carpool. She still needs to make sure laundry's done. She still needs to make sure that all the doors are locked before she goes to bed. It's like all these things that she just feels that she needs to do. And that's after what? A 10-hour workday?
Yeah.
So does that play into it? It could. Mm-hmm. Other things are, you know, in society in general, and Dr. Weinstein said on my show last time, you know, society's changed. People are getting more brutal. They are expecting a lot more for a lot less. You know, that's a huge issue. I mean, he told the story of a lady climbing over the American Airlines counter in Dallas or mm-hmm. Chicago and getting arrested. I mean, that's the type of behavior we're talking about. I mean, just see how people treat people at a restaurant or at the checkout or even hotels, movie theaters, you name it, anywhere where there's customer service involved,
right?
It's changed. And mm-hmm. so it's not just veterinary medicine. You and I are just see veterinary medicine. So mm-hmm. we see that all the time. You know, does that have something to do with it? I don't know. Are we changing the type of students that we're accepting? Like, are we just accepting basically an IQ? You know, we don't have any emotional intelligence or soft skills coming in. They really don't have any realistic career preview because there are vet schools out there that do not require veterinary hours to get in. And if they do, it's only 100 hours, which is, what, 2.5 weeks? Mm-hmm. And most of the time, if you go in and volunteer for 2.5 weeks at a veterinary clinic, they're like, hey, you go stand over there and just see what happens, you know? Because a lot of veterinarians don't have the insurance to cover if that student gets bit mm-hmm. or gets injured. So does that have something to do with it? Are we doing a good job mentoring these younger students, right? Nowadays, especially younger, early career veterinarians are being thrown into jobs where there are not enough people there willing to mentor a new student. You know, I had a job, an interview with a early career vet about a year and a half ago, and she chose a practice with 10 veterinarians instead of a practice that I had three mm-hmm. because she said she would learn more. And I was trying to explain to her, I'm like, just because there are 10 veterinarians there doesn't mean you have 10 people that want to teach you and hold your hand.
Right.
They don't want to give out their cell phone number. They don't want to make sure that they're emotionally connected to you. That just isn't part of the profession anymore. And then last but not least, are we doing a good job helping people with their professional identity? Like, are these people that are going into the profession truly having the same values that the profession holds for them? And I mean, if you look in the demands of emotional labor, that dimmer switch, if emotional labor is high, people have a hard time walking away from their values. So they have a personal strife inside. So it's a question that for the ages, you're going to hear, ask 20 people and get 20 different answers. But I kind of try to summarize all the answers I've heard so far.
Yeah. I mean, and those are important because, you know, you talk about the shift in gender and who's like the majority of it. It's like 75%, 25 or something like that, right? And for me, I always like to say, and me and my wife discuss this a lot about, you know, moving up in positions and things like that. And I feel like a lot of women that do come up into like roles where they are leaders, and let's say that they're disciplining someone or having a conversation, it's strangely easier, which I still won't understand, to say she's just being a bitch instead of being a good leader. Whereas you don't really hear that with like men in the profession. Yeah, they do say, oh, he's being a dick. But at the same time, I feel like they put more emphasis on the female leaders that are out there, which I don't even know how many female leaders there are in veterinary medicine, let's say practice owners or corporate CEOs or, you know, chief medical officers of facilities. I don't know exactly what that climate's going to look like, but this shift has been slowly happening, and I think it's going to stay for quite a while. So how does one like myself, like, how do I encourage those in my class to want to become those leaders, even though they see all of the things happening around them, especially the women?
Well, what you just said, Neil, if you read any leadership papers that compare gender, you nailed it right on the head. When the guy is the asshole leader, or, you know, just, you know, being a, I don't want to say it, okay, I'll say it, being a dick, that is looked at as, oh, he's a strong leader.
Right.
Flip the coin, a woman does it, exactly. She's called a bitch, and her reviews from the people that she's in charge of will just destroy her. Mm-hmm. It is proven. It is in many papers about leadership. So the thing is that I don't care if you're a man, woman, it doesn't matter. When you talk about leadership, you got to do it with charisma, and you got to do it in such a way that...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You're transformational in other people's lives. That is a different way than telling people what to do. That militant type leadership doesn't fly anymore in any veterinary hospital.
Right.
So you got to be, act like, you got to be almost the mom or the dad or some sort of parental type leader, and you will get more out of them. You got to be, and I know a lot of people say you can't mix business and pleasure, but when you work with people that you see more than your family, you got to get more involved and understand that lifing does happen. So there is absolutely no reason any woman or man should ever think, I can't be a good leader. Mm-hmm. Leaders are not born. Leaders, everyone has leadership qualities. Very simple. If you're a parent, you're a leader, right? You're leading your children and teaching them and mentoring them. same concept. When you're being a owner or a leader of a practice, you got to have the same mentality. And you also got to realize you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea.
Right.
If you think you're going to make everyone happy, you might as well just go into pharmaceutical veterinary medicine. Right? Because yeah. It's not going to happen.
That's true. And that's tough. So in your career, like throughout your long 800 years of being a veterinarian and graduating with Abraham Lincoln, what was like the biggest the biggest issue that you had with these higher ups in companies or wherever you worked, where the authoritative figure was there? What were they receptive of you? Like, did you feel like because you were a man, you had an up on the way you communicated? Or did you feel like your experience, your emotional intelligence came into play where you were able to kind of be that chameleon and transfer, you know, how you act toward different people?
Well, I'm going to be really honest with you. I knew coming out of veterinary school, I could not work for somebody immediately. And so I found a job in Laguna Beach where I told them I want to be actively involved in all the daily decisions. And for him, he's like, awesome. I don't have to do that crap anymore. You have at it. Because veterinarians are not good business people, right? They don't want to deal with the business. They want to see animals. I mean, you ask a generation ahead of me veterinarians what they were concerned about with veterinary medicine. There'll be a few that say, oh, I wanted to make money. You know, I was in it, you know, that was very important. But a lot of people will tell you, as long as I could pay the lights, I could pay the staff, and I could put food on my table and keep a roof over my head, I was successful.
Mm, that's unfortunate.
Right. So, but that being said, I was out 2.5-3 years before I was part owner of a veterinary practice. Now, the emotional intelligence piece, I had to learn. I did not have any emotional intelligence coming out of vet school. I was a bull in a china shop. I pissed off so many employees. I lost a lot of employees. And finally, my wife and my manager had to come to Jesus talk with me. And they're like, listen, you're really being an asshole. You have to understand these people work here for low wages, but they come in here because they want to make a difference. They come in here because they love the practice. They come in here because they want to make you proud. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. You might as well have swung a baseball bat in my stomach, because I did a lot of reflection for like the next couple months, and boom, changed. I knew exactly what you have to show empathy. You have to understand where these people are coming from. You have to understand, hey, I live in a nice house. You live in a 2-bedroom apartment with 6 roommates. Your car is probably going to get repossessed. You know, these people don't not work in veterinary hospitals because of the money. Mm-hmm. They could get more money in California at Starbucks or Burger King than they can working at a veterinary.
Yeah, serving tables. Sure.
Right? So it's something that you'll learn. It was something that now where I'm sitting in my career is now, I wish I would have read more emotional intelligence, or at least be introduced to the concept. At some point, it's those soft skills that take time. I could talk to clients. Sure. I'm a used car salesman.
Right.
I love talking to people.
Right.
Right. But but when it came to employees, when I was first working, I was thinking, son of a bitch, how much am I paying you? Why are you sitting there? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my lines I used to say, hey, is the counter falling over? Because you seem to be holding it up pretty good. Mm-hmm. And immediately I knew that shit had to change, right? Now, a little preview. I'm gonna have about 6 or 7 of my old employees come in, and we're gonna do a podcast. And I hope they're blunt honest with everything I did wrong and everything I did right. Because if I look at it, I'm like, hey man, I did everything right. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. I fucked up bad.
Sure.
I learned from my lessons. Especially my failures, and I moved on. But the biggest one I learned is you got to be realistic with what is coming to work at your clinic. Very rarely do you find someone who graduated from college and is like, oh, I just want to be a kennel person or a veterinary assistant or a receptionist. So I think, I think when you think that way and you realize it that way, you'll have more understanding where they're coming from.
Yeah. And I think the biggest issue with like a lot of, let's just talk about veterinary students because that's the realm I know right now, is confidence and also feedback. Like, I feel like a lot of people, obviously no one likes to hear shitty feedback, but it's so vital to have shitty feedback so you can correct yourself and know your mistakes. Like, for me, I'm always doing that. In any interaction, I give people feedback, and sometimes my wife is like, you can't call them out on that. Like, you just look like an asshole. But my reasoning behind it is my intentions are so that they change those behaviors or recognize them themselves that they're, you know, not that it's not okay to act like that or it's not okay to do that. And I think there's a time and a place to always do that. And I think veterinary medicine is getting a better handle on it. I have seen it, but I've still even recently been at a clinic where the doctor turns their back and the tech is like, he's such a dick. And I literally turn to that person and I say, have you told them that? And they're like, oh no, never. I would never say that. I'm like, so you're going to come in doing the same exact thing, letting the same thing happen and expect different outcomes. You're the idiot. And I say that with so much, you know, love and compassion, and it sounds so backwards, but to me, I would rather be called out on something that maybe I didn't even notice or in the heat of the moment that things were happening. I would rather be shown a better way to approach that or self-reflection, kind of like what you did. And you may experience that when your, you know, previous employees come in, and that's such a great thing. I think feedback is super, super important, and it will literally hold you back if you never get it. I don't think you can be successful without feedback.
But you also have to remember there's a correct way and incorrect way to give feedback.
Sure, absolutely.
Your blunt honesty, love it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't, let's just kind of fluff what I really feel.
Right.
That's bullshit. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what that happened right there with that technician.
Yeah.
If you truly want to change, and the person you're working for doesn't listen to you, then you need to find a new practice.
Yeah.
If you don't want to take feedback, how are you going to get better? How are you going to gain confidence? How are you going to be able to have that holy shit moment where every veterinarian has at least five.
Right.
And things don't turn out well. How are you going to change it? How are you going to learn from your mistake if you don't get feedback? Like, I had two that I can remember. And the guy who I was working for, Dr. John Hamill, he sat me down and he told me exactly what went wrong. One was with a client and one was with a 210-pound Irish Wolfhound spay. Mm.
Big spay.
It was a big spay. And a gastropexy at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So I spayed and gastropexied this Irish wolfhound, and son of a bitch, the belly filled full of blood. Mm. And of course, it was my half day because I was daddy Uber on Tuesdays. And he called me that night and he's like, we need to talk. I'm like, okay. You know, as soon as your boss tells you that, you're like, oh,
yeah.
You know? And he was like, I just want to let you know, your Irish wolfhound had a belly full of blood. It wasn't the stumps. It was from your gastrotomy or your gastropexy muscular flap site. Mm. And he's like, you nicked one of the thoracic arteries or that, you know, there's like intercostal mm-hmm. things. And I was like, oh no. And he's like, don't worry. Dog's fine. Dog's doing great. PCV's 34. I'm like, okay. Good. But then again, I was thinking, well, the dog wouldn't have died.
Sure. All bleeding stops sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the dog wasn't going to die. This PCV was 34 yeah. and he, you know, but anyway, so, but that was hard. You know, that was hard because my mentor had to call my client mm-hmm. that night and tell him what happened. Mm-hmm. And then I had to call that client the next day. And you have to definitely put your big pants on and when it comes to that type of phone call. But if it wasn't for the feedback, mm-hmm. I would have never have known. If it wasn't for the feedback, I wouldn't have been like, hey, the dog wasn't bleeding from a 200 and some odd pound Irish Wolfhound, wasn't bleeding from the spay, sure. which everyone freaks out about.
Yeah.
It was from a little freaking bleeder from the gastropexy site. But guess what? Never made that mistake twice.
Yeah.
So, and I always give feedback too. I mean, and do you think, I'll ask you, how many people in your vet class get feedback and get upset when their professors talk to them?
Like, how many people actively seek it, or how many people? Because, I mean, we get feedback all the time. I think, like,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Every site that we visit, for example, I just finished doing 2 weeks of equine ambulatory medicine, and I just received my feedback, and you actually have the ability. It's a whole form, like, did this student, did they know all the differentials? Like, how were they willing to help? Like, what was their attitude? Stuff like that. There's like a special private area where they can write comments and only the faculty can see. And then they rank you on like a 1 to 5, like where you are 5-4, 5-4, whatever. And then you can, you can agree with it or not agree with it. So you can attest, like, there's a box that says like, why do you disagree and things like that? Or you just approve it and it goes to like your file. So I think that's very helpful. I don't think students are going up enough to professors or site, preceptors and asking for that feedback. I'm not actively having those conversations with them where they're saying, oh, they told me I do this. But like for me, at the end of that, I was like, hey, how did I do? What can I do better? Because like I said, I'm in my safe space. I'm allowed to fuck up. Like right now, it's perfect time for me to do it because I can correct that. And of course, I'm not perfect. I'm going to mess up. And I'm okay with that because I know how I react is going to be in the light of wanting to be a better vet than I was yesterday. And I think keeping that and putting that mindset into veterinary professionals that are going into the field and that are young and that haven't had as much experience in just life in general, in communication, in feedback, through everything that they do, they're going to be a lot better if they start asking for it. So I really, to answer your question, I really don't think they're asking enough. They don't, because if they were asking about enough with their feedback, then they wouldn't be complaining about it all the time. They wouldn't be constantly complaining about the exam was unfair, this was that. I hear it all the time. All the time. I can't get away. I could not go to school like one day without not hearing something negative. And don't get me wrong, I have fed into some of those sometimes because I do get flustered. I do get flustered with academia because there's such a disassociation between each other when it comes to a lot of different things. There is a definite wonderful place for it. I am appreciative of my education. I'm not clowning that at all. I think it's a great education. It is the only way I would be able to pass vet school is the school I'm at, just because of the way that the curriculum is given to me. But I feel like the feedback, it's this negative feedback mechanism in their bodies just isn't doing what it should do. It should motivate you to want to be better. And I think it does. It does. It's disheartening to hear. They're not accepting the feedback. They're wanting to argue it. It's always an argument. I feel like I hear all the time that it's them pointing the finger, and that kind of pisses me off sometimes, especially when they're the guilty one. So that's a little infuriating for me. But at the end of the day, I can only control how I react and who I encourage around me to act, and I put myself around those people who share those values, because I don't have time. I'm a girl dad. Like I would love to change everybody's mind. I would love to be that figure for people and say, come get in my backpack. Like I can handle the emotional toll that you can't right now, but I just can't do it. My one-year-old daughter's taking all that out of me right now.
Well, exactly. But the one thing that you're saying, they're sitting there, they're bitching.
Sure.
Right? They're sitting there, they're complaining. They're sitting there all upset. They're arguing with the professor. Mm-hmm. That's a lack of emotional intelligence. The problem is that, and you're kind of making my argument, the problem is that a great majority of these vet students were kick-ass, I don't want to say high school, but undergrad.
Right, yeah.
Kick-ass,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Never needed feedback. Maybe they didn't need feedback in high school either, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, their idea of, hey, I'm a great student. Why are you giving me feedback?
Right.
Why am I failing? Why did you write this on my paper? Why did you give me such, on an equine rotation, I didn't do anything they said. It's because they're not used to it. Mm-hmm. They're not used to handling that they've done something wrong or they could do something better, because when you graduate with a 3.9 or 4.0, you're damn near perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the issues that same idea, that same concept you explained, then trickles into practice.
Right.
They won't listen to the clients. Mm-mm. They won't listen to experienced veterinarians. They won't even listen to the technicians that have been working there for 28 years, right? I know better. I know more. Oh, I graduated. There's new techniques now. I mean, I always got that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, seriously, yeah, those new techniques are freaking awesome. That new machine, it is amazing, but that new machine cost $120,000.
Sure.
Why can't we do it with a $12,000 machine for now? Mm-hmm. Because I guarantee you, I could probably buy that other one used in a couple of years, mm-hmm. and we can do it. So, I mean, I think when I had veterinary students come through my practice, there was one in particular that was arguing everything I did. Instead of saying, oh, wow, that's interesting. I've never seen that done like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that, wow, I never even thought of that. They argued it because this is how we do it at our vet school. Mm-hmm. And then she tried to argue with me that people had anal sacs just like dogs and cats.
Mm. Interesting. Got mine expressed last week.
You did? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing the butt wheelies for a little while. Didn't know what that's it okay. was. I thought it was pinworms.
The pooter scooter?
Yeah. 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 But, you know, the thing is, like, you when it comes to your school in particular, I think, or your schooling, mm-hmm. I think the reason you're getting so much out of it is you're going above and beyond, as we discussed last time, mm-hmm. compared to everybody else. Textbooks only teach you a little bit. They just teach you about that much. There isn't a textbook that says, hey, you're going to have a lady that's going to pull up in a $400,000 Porsche and say your fees are too much. It doesn't talk about you're going to have a whole family coming in bawling because their dog collapsed as soon as they got home. They don't bring those things to your attention. Immediately, they teach you how to come up with differentials pretty on the fly, which is great. But that's only part of the equation. So you got to be prepared to open your mind more. When someone tells you something, they're usually telling you because it's something that worked for them. Mm-hmm. Put it in your pocket. Take it out if you ever need it. Throw it away. That's your choice. But take it. Just take it. If someone's, think of your mind as a sponge at this point, including you. The more you can absorb now, the easier your life's going to be when you graduate 3 years down the road. 7 years down the road. There was, you know, I used to use aminopentamide for diarrhea. One injection. And everyone come out like, oh my God, what is that? Oh, you know, I don't even know what that is. And then, you know, they took it off. It used to be called Sentry, and then they took it off. And that I had to get it compounded. But guess what? One injection? One injection stopped the diarrhea, which is why the owners were always coming in. I wouldn't give more than one injection.
Right.
Just one. So, you know, and I don't know what people are using now because it's not available anymore. And I always used to tell my staff, I go, as soon as they stop making this or we can't carry it anymore, I quit.
Yeah. It's like your miracle diarrhea drug.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you're up. They've been up for 3 days in the middle of the night,
yeah.
Probably with kids. They're exhausted and they have to pick up diarrhea off the throw rug or diarrhea off, or take them for a walk and it's, you know, 22 degrees outside and sleeting.
What was the contraindications of that drug?
If you give it too much, it causes a severe ileus, and then you can get, you can almost get a, you can actually cause necrosis of the intestinal tract. Just like if you're using atropine.
Sure.
Because there are veterinarians that use atropine to stop diarrhea.
That's interesting.
Yeah. See, but those are old tricks that people don't know.
Yeah.
But those are little tricks that'll help you in the long run, right? Because if you have happy clients, your life's a lot easier. If you have pissed off clients, your life sucks.
Yeah. No, I agree. Even if the treatment's not working, I think that there's still an ability to make that client happy because you have to go in at teamwork. Like if you start, to me, like I always want to start every appointment, including like it's the triad, like me, the techs, and the client are all putting the patient right in the middle. And so if like we go on this team base, even when things fail, it's, hey, you know what? Let's up that dose. Let's up that dose of seizure meds that you've got going on. We can go up to 60 or whatever, you know, we can get up to that threshold before we need to kind of reassess or send you to a specialist. We know money's tight, so let's work together. If you approach something like that, again, this all goes back to communication and feedback, and how you see your clients is how you're going to change your treatment. And your treatment is also what you say just to them as a person. There's like we talked about earlier, being blunt is great, but you have to be that chameleon in the clinic to be successful. And you've probably witnessed that yourself being, you know, Mr. Used Car Salesman, because you do have to convince those people. You do have to earn their trust. You do have to, you know, relay bad news. You do have to say, I messed up with the gastropexy. And I think this is going to be like Dr. Weinstein always says, shout out to Dr. Weinstein. The biggest problem is the communication aspect when it comes to lawsuits. Like even if you mess up, even if it's your fault completely, right? You, of course, have to assume responsibilities for that. But what you say to that client may absolve you from getting a board complaint. You know what I mean? Like, and to me, that already seems more than worth it to double down on your emotional intelligence, on your communication skills, and on the way that you receive feedback. Why the hell would you not do that? You do that for academics. Why is there a left brain and a right brain incongruency that's going on with these vet students that aren't putting as much effort into their studies as they are into their communication skills? Like it irks me so much to my core to see like these super intelligent people, and immediately I disassociate from them, not on their ability to practice medicine, but their ability to communicate.
Well, I'm going to have more data on that in about a year.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's those super intelligent people that really have a hard time learning the communication piece, right? Because they're in there studying, and nothing wrong with that. We need more people that want to do residencies, internships, specialize. I for sure we need all that. But the one thing we definitely need is to learn how to talk to clients with empathy. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that you truly understand where they're coming from, because Fifi might not be doing well.
Right.
And Fifi might be their last connection to their husband that passed away. Or Fifi might be the dog that's there with the owner, and it was their kid's dog, but now their kids have moved, you know, across country. So there's always a story behind. So communication is how you learn to read the room. By communicating and bringing your team in, if you're not sure where things are going to go, you can always ask your technician, hey, what kind of vibe did you get? You know, where do you think this is going to go? Are they pissed at me? What do you think is going to happen? Because they'll give you honest feedback, hopefully. Because they're part of your team. They're there for the hospital. They're there for the animal. They're there for you. But that communication is what, like I said, you're going to get the vibe for the room. Like, you're going to kind of understand within the first minute or two where this is going to go. Are they going to trust you? Are they not going to trust you? Like, perfect example. New client comes in. I've been to so many damn vets and they don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right then and there, you know this is going to be a difficult thing.
Sure.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do that's going to make it different that they trust you? But the other question I'm going to ask is, do you really want them to trust you?
Yeah, they may not be the client for you.
You got to keep that in the back of your head. But that's just by coming in there. Hey, how you doing? How's everything going? Oh, this is your daughter. Hey, how old are you? You know, oh, what sports do you play? Like, get the vibe going.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out there. They open up more. They build that trust. They're like, oh my gosh. Like, the coolest thing you can do as a veterinarian is if you have a young animal in there and you're listening, you know, you're sculpting the chest, have the kid put the stethoscope in their ears.
I like that.
They love that.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hamill, he used to in the charts write down all the kids' birthdays.
Mm.
So if they did come in, he's like, holy cow, you just had a birthday. What did you, you know, how was it? But again, that's the soft skills piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that's communication. And Bonnie Lutz, who was a client of mine before I retired, she's the veterinarian that she's the lawyer that defends all veterinarians against state boards.
Yeah, she just came and spoke at our school. It was cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna reach out to her and have her come in and do a podcast.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. And I think it might be a good idea for the two of us.
I'm game.
The student
I'd love to pick
the student and the one who avoided the board. Right?
My future.
Yeah. The cover your ass practice, the practicing of medicine.
Yep.
But it was all about communication.
Mm-hmm.
She would call it cover your assets.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
I thought that was the best title. The best title. And she's still working out there. And I don't know if she has an associate coming on that's going to continue her fight.
Mm-hmm.
But people, they'll take you to state board like that. And you got to remember, at least in California, the state board is run on the money that they raise in fines is what funds the state board. There's no money coming from the budget of the state. Ooh. So they're going to ask you, they're going to ask you for your charts.
Yep.
First thing, if they ask for the chart, you only send the date that's in question.
Mm-hmm.
You don't send the whole chart.
Yeah.
This the date's in question. And you better pray to God that you dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's, because you at least will get nailed with a records violation, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, whatever money it is. But that is also could be considered negligence, and you got that on you
mm-hmm.
at the state board level.
And it's
a public record. And
people can look it up. I think that's worse. The fines, whatever. Like, sure, if you messed up, you know, you didn't put a period at the end of your sentence and they want to get you for that, that's great. But most people aren't going to look into it. They're just going to read what the title of the thing was. Like, they don't have access to see what the entire, you know, manuscript says between
improper record keeping.
Yeah. And they're going to look at that and go, oh my God, they gave
killed somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're screwed there. So yeah, it's a paper trail. And trust me, I looked
Dude, you can't fight ignorance. That's the problem.
Like, that is 100%.
So let me ask you a question. What's worse? State board complaint?
Mm-hmm.
Or someone smearing you on Yelp, Facebook, and Google?
I don't give a shit about that.
Which one is worse? I know you don't give a shit about that, but again, you're the unicorn of your vet school class.
You're giving me too much grace here. I don't know. No, I still think the board complaint, to me, I think that I'd like to think that the board is made up of very competent individuals that are able to look into the specific scenario and either dismiss or have a, you know, justifiable reason if you're saying that was the complaint. I think that they have more than enough capability to justify themselves for that. Again, don't know because I've never had one against me. I've never been put in that situation. So I'm sure there are some of you out there that have complaints that are complete bullshit, totally understandable. I'd love to hear them. But, you know, the whole Yelp thing, the whole Facebook review thing, people are going to do it anyway. So why worry about it? You know, it's, I want to say out of the 10 really happy people that you made throughout the day, maybe one of them will write a review. But out of the 2 unhappy people that you had throughout the day, you're going to have 3 people write a bad review about you. So, you know, yes, of course, a lot of businesses, you know, it will affect your business, right? But I think there's ways to not let that hinder you. I think replying to them is great. I don't care. I love watching people. I have a buddy that his dad has a practice and they reply to them. I mean, the practice I worked at, they replied to him. We had some lady trying to return open medications and she was trying to get full money back for a half used bottle of stuff. And she wrote a complaint that was super vague and made it look like we were taking advantage of her. And it was basically like, they wouldn't give my money back. X, Y, and Z. And we had our practice manager go on there and it literally state out a long page of what exactly happened. And she didn't reply, you know? So at the end of the day, I would rather have that reply. And I think there's a professional way to reply to it because you can look like a jackass doing it. But I definitely do not that I don't care, but I wouldn't let it eat away at me. You know what I mean?
Okay. Because the reason why I was going at that is because online reviews can be seen by millions easily. Like, yeah, you right got to go look up that state board.
Absolutely.
Right. And as far as replying, when it first came out, the recommendation was don't reply. It's unprofessional. Mm-hmm. But there are still some veterinarians that would reply, but they would reply without empathy. They would reply just
absolutely.
Like, they didn't sit on it for like 36 hours and then write the reply. Mm-hmm. They see it.
Right.
The good news is now you have something called Gemini Pro or ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. Get the reply. Mm-hmm. You can tell it the prompts.
Yep.
Please reply with empathy and compassion and understanding. So you can get around that now.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? Just if you are going to write a reply, give it 24, 36, 48 hours. Use your AI tools to help you because then you don't come off as a jackass. Mm-hmm. Because you can come off even worse if you get that defensive.
Absolutely.
And I understand it. I mean, you coming after me,
right?
You know, it's the worst. And the other thing I want to tell you about the state board is that you're guilty until proven innocent.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that many times.
No, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You have to prove why what you did is okay.
The people, not for the veterinarian.
Right.
Absolutely.
They're a consumer board.
Right.
So you got to prove why and what you did was in the best interest of that animal's health. Mm-hmm. So
I think I think that's good. I don't see that as a bad thing.
But the problem is that these clients that are
not the guilty part. I'm talking about having a board that's for the people's pets and
right. But the thing, but you also have to look who's on the board. I can tell you who was on the California board a few years back. Mm-hmm. She is crazy animal rights activist.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And she's sitting on the state board?
That's interesting.
What shot do you have? Mm. Thank gosh COVID came in and they weren't seeing any cases for like 2-3 years. I think they still have probably a 2-3 year backlog. But she's gone now. Thank gosh. Mm. Woo. Then she ran for city council and got her ass handed to her. Thank gosh. But the thing is, it is not always, I mean, when you get a state board to complain, it's the worst. And as Peter Weinstein would say, if you do get a bad complaint, first thing you do is call your insurance lawyer. Mm-hmm. Second thing you do is call your insurance company. Let them, and then you call the client. Mm-hmm. And if it does go to the state board, that's where the insurance company and the lawyer takes it. You don't get involved that much.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, again, the biggest mistake veterinarians make is when they call the clinic or send an email. We want the records. Mm-hmm. The receptionist sends them all.
Ugh, that's scary.
That's do they not watch gasoline on a freaking little smoldering fire, wondering why all of a sudden, you know, we got an uncontrolled fire that's 30,000 acres. You got to make sure you just do that little bit.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn,
and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.